Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone. My name is Margie Milam. I'm a senior director at ICANN, and it's a pleasure for me to welcome you to the webinar for today, which is Answers to the Top 10 Questions About the Proposed Next Generation Registration Directory Services to Replace Whois. Before we begin, I'd like to remind all participants of the housekeeping items. This webinar is being recorded. So if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. At the end of the webinar, you'll be given an opportunity to voice your comments and questions during the question and answer section. The EWG will receive a copy of the chat transcript. Please note that the chat transcripts are being archived, and please, we ask that you follow the ICANN expected standards of behavior. Your lines are currently muted and will be opened at the Q&A section. In the meantime, you're more than welcome to submit your questions and or comments by the Adobe Connect chat pod. If you do not wish to voice your comments or questions during the Q&A section, please mute your line by pressing star 6, and then to unmute it, press star 7. The slides, the recording, and the transcript will be made available following the session on the announcement page. So today we will more deeply explore the key features of the proposed Registration Directory Services, the RDS as we call it, which is the foundation from which the GNSO and the community can develop a new global policy for GTLD registration data. This is designed to protect personal privacy and ensure greater accuracy, accountability, and transparency for the entire ICANN ecosystem. So the goal of this webinar is to help you understand and to ask any questions that you may have about how the proposed RDS tackles some of the difficult questions, such as difficult data privacy issues, validation challenges that have often degraded data quality and accuracy, and also how it strikes a balance between access and accountability. And with that, we'll turn to Michaele Nalon, who will serve as a moderator today.
Thanks, Margie. Michaele Nalon. Good afternoon, everybody, or morning or evening, depending on which time zone you're in. As previously mentioned, this entire thing is being recorded, and if you don't want a public record of something, don't put it in the chat, because it's all going to be logged and it's all going to be published. So you have been warned. Okay, so our agenda for today's webinar, basic introduction to give you some kind of background as to where this all came from. And then we're going to look at the top 10 questions or so that we have received in relation to our final report, which was published a couple of months ago. We'll also provide links and some updates as well on next steps, so links to both reports and various other documents, and then we will open things up for a Q&A session. During the Q&A session, you will be able to ask questions either via the chat or using your voice and the phone and the Adobe functions, and I'll be looking after that as well. Okay, next slide. So what is this EWG? EWG, it's an acronym, stands for Expert Working Group. It's formed from kind of outside the kind of normal process, in that we were chartered by the ICANN board and CEO, and the question we were asked to answer is the one there highlighted on the slide in with a yellow background. Is there an alternative to today's Whois to better serve the global internet community? Now, the thing is that for those of you who have been following ICANN stuff for a long time, there have been multiple studies and multiple working groups and other studies and research things and papers looking at Whois and looking at ways of fixing, changing, tweaking various aspects of domain registration data, in other words, Whois. However, they were all looking at it in terms of modifying what currently exists. In the case of the EWG, the idea was to start from the ground up. Rather than trying to fix what already exists, let's build something new which would hopefully address all of the issues, the use cases, etc., etc. So the membership of the EWG It was global, came from a variety of different countries, and several of the EWG members are joining me on this call today to go through some of these questions, so you'll hear lots of different accents. We come from a broad range of expertise, different types of backgrounds. You have people from all over the place with different experiences. We worked together closely over the period of about 16 months or so. We had multiple face-to-face meetings, lots of phone calls, and hundreds of emails. The statistics and the breakdown of all that is actually in the final report, if you're so inclined to have a look at it. Okay, so next slide, please. So the EWG, our final report, we came up with this proposal for what we're calling the Next Generation Registration Directory Service. So as it's ICANN, we're getting ourselves a nice new acronym, the RDS. The idea being to strike a balance between accuracy of the data, providing access to the data, dealing with issues around privacy, and also we introduce the concept of accountability within the entire system. So our proposed solution collects, validates, and discloses GTLD data for permissible purposes only. Now, this concept of permissible purposes only, again, this is something that is relatively new, the idea being that not all possible uses of domain registration data should be permissible, should be allowed. We know there are certain people or certain groups that might want to use domain registration data for nefarious purposes, for illegal purposes, or to do, you know, generally bad things. Under the current paradigm, the access to domain registration data is pretty much open to the world. Anybody who wants access to the data can do a Whois lookup, and there's no real limits around what data they're able to access. So we would think that as a result of this, the overall quality of the data isn't particularly good, nor are registrants' privacy rights particularly well protected. Under the paradigm that we're suggesting, the access to the data would be more protected through this purpose-driven gated access concept. And of course, all of this is covered in gory detail, so obviously there are no photographs, but we have nice diagrams, in the full report, which of course you can download via the ICANN website. So at this juncture then, we're going to move on to the top 10 questions that we've received about the RDS, and at this juncture I'll hand you over to Susan.
Thanks, Michaeli. So what makes the RDS different? We gave a lot of thought to this. Current Whois provides a one-size-fits-all public access to anonymous users. The RDS would require that you tell them who you are and why you need the info before you would have access to additional data. There is some public data that's available, and we'll talk about that later. There's also little accountability or abuse remedies currently, and limited individual privacy protection or ability to conform to differing laws. The rules engine in the RDS could conform to applicable law in whatever region the registrar or the registrant resided in. And then there's a limited ability to ensure data integrity currently, but the RDS would require validation of the data. There's a lack of security and auditing capabilities in the current Whois. Auditing would be much easier with one centralized source of the data. There's a lack of security, there's cumbersome contact management now. You have to, with each and every registrar currently, you create your own registrant profiles. But in the RDS, you could use one profile, one set of data universally across all GTLDs. And there's inefficient communication. You don't know where your data is. You've got to remember which registrar you're with, and looking up a who is record currently is cumbersome. So the proposed RDS was designed to address all of these who is shortcomings and circumvent those problems. Scott Hollenbeck will present the next slide.
Okay, thank you. Scott Hollenbeck here. And so question number two is, did the EWG choose a centralized model for the RDS? As others have mentioned, we spent a lot of time talking about many different things, and one of the topics that we spent a very long amount of time on was exactly what a service like this could look like and the different ways it could be implemented and deployed. And if you look at the current slide, you'll see a number of possible models. And without going into a detailed description of what each one is, if you look at the final report, you can see each of these in very gory detail. What we thought was that a synchronized model, which had formerly been called aggregated, would be the most efficient way to marry the needs of all of the consumers and producers while allowing us to meet as many of the requirements as possible. And we use the term synchronized because it describes the way data is being moved from producers to publisher in a consistent, secure, safe manner. We also asked IBM to look at these different models and give us a rough estimate of the costs that might be required to implement and deploy each one. And the synchronized model came out looking very favorable. And so in the end, this was the model that we suggest is the best way to meet all of the requirements for the community. Thank you, and we'll now move on to the next slide. Stephanie?
Yes, hi, it's Stephanie Perrin here. And the next topic is, or the next question rather, is does the RDS eliminate free public access to data? And it certainly restricts public access to data so that sensitive data, personal information, is only available to persons who are become accredited and who have shown their legitimate reason to access that data. We're also proposing a rules engine that will enforce data protection law, which may not necessarily be the case in all instances at the moment. So there was concern expressed during our consultations that people would not have public access to the data they need. In fact, they will still get the basic domain information, and they will get names where the name has been released, and that would, of course, include businesses who have a keen invested interest in releasing their name. Might not necessarily include individuals, depending on their relevant data protection and their choice. But there will always be contact data for technical resolution. So the key concern being the promotion of internet stability and meeting basic DNS needs. So the short answer is it eliminates some free public access, but it provides the necessary free public access. And so people will still be able to, in an unauthenticated way, log on and get the information they need for basic domain registration questions. So on to the next slide. And it's Scott again.
Yes, thank you, Stephanie. So this slide, we're asked the question, what would I need to do to access gated RDS data? As Stephanie described a moment ago, one of the recommendations we made is that there's some differences be made in terms of data that is considered available to the general public and data that is considered private and needs to be protected and would only be disclosed under certain circumstances. So if you look at this slide, you'll see something called an authenticated requester. And you may be wondering, well, what exactly is an authenticated requester? Well, this is a person who requests credentials from an accreditor of some sort. So we have a new actor introduced into the ecosystem. We're recommending that there be entities or agencies that are authorized to receive requests, review them, and issue credentials for access based on stated permissible purposes. So, for example, a law enforcement officer would need to apply to an appropriate agency who can determine if this person is who they say they are and if they are authorized to perform queries, you know, with the purpose of law enforcement access. So when a requester requests and receives these credentials, they can present them to the RDS in the context of making a query, where they will provide their ID, their purpose. And if the RDS can validate these credentials and the request, they will return a response that includes a combination of the public data and the appropriate gated data. Okay? Next slide, Susan.
Thanks, Scott. So what new data will the RDS collect? Today, you will see the image at the top of the slide is the current who is data chart. But the RDS, we looked at all the possible communication points and permissible uses and decided on a few somewhat new concepts. So today, the new data that the RDS will collect is other communication methods. So you could use have your SMS listed as a data point for contact, or your LinkedIn profile, just any other new communication method as the internet evolves. But we also came up with the purpose-driven RDS, which is we've decided on PBCs, purpose-based contacts. And all of these, there are several roles that we decided on, including abuse, technical, legal, business. And so you can designate third parties as your purpose-based contact. For those specific purposes, those would be the contact points for your registration. And in the new data record associated with a domain name registration, you would only, available to the public would only be the registry and the registrar information, which is needed to manage and run the domain name, your registrant contact ID, and an email address associated with that registrant contact ID. So you'd always be able to contact the registrant, but you may not know their name or physical address or telephone number without telling the RDS who you are and why you need that information. And then the PBC contact IDs would be available. But just the ID numbers, if you need to contact somebody for an abuse issue with a domain name, you would have to tell the RDS once again who you are and why you need it. So we've limited the public access of data, but by validating and verifying information in the data record, you would, once you told us who you were and why you need it, you would get validated information to make that contact that you need. And on to the next slide.
Yeah, thank you, Suzanne. The question on this slide is, what are contacts and what are contact IDs? Contacts are simply deliverable blocks of contact data, while contact IDs are unique identifiers that link domain names to contacts. Contact IDs are made available publicly to anonymous users, while contact data, which are names and addresses, are mostly gated. You need to have some kind of accreditation and authorization to be able to access contact data in most cases. Whereas anybody can access contact ID because they are made available publicly. To improve accountability and reachability while giving everyone more control over personal data, there's a concept of purpose-based contacts. Every domain name must have some purpose-based contacts, and they must also have registrant contacts. Four of the purpose-based contacts in CDC are mandatory for every domain name, while two of them are optional. Every domain name must have a registrar contact, they must have admin contact, they must have technical contact, abuse contact, and legal contact. Whereas business contact is optional. Privacy and privacy provider contacts are only required for those who require such a service. Next slide, please. The question on this slide is, how would the RVS improve data quality, privacy, and security? To give incentives to registrants to give accurate data as a means of improving data quality, the RVS gives registrants and contact holders enormous control over their personal data. Because they have control over their personal data, because they can choose which data to make public or different, that is a sort of incentive to registrants to provide accurate data, thereby improving the data quality of the RCS. And more importantly, whichever data the registrant supplies has to go through some kind of validation to ensure that the data are actually accurate. There are three types of validation. One is syntactic validation, two, operational validation, and the third one is identity validation. Syntactic validation is mandatory for all data elements. Operational validation is required for most of the data elements, while the identity validation is optional. These are the measures that are taken to ensure that the data that is supplied to the RDS are of good quality. I would like to hand over to Stefani to discuss how the RDS improves privacy and security. Stefani, hand over to you, please.
Okay, it's Stephanie Perrin again. As both Scott and Lonry have explained, there's a great deal more complexity in verifying who is requesting access to data once inside the RDS. So that in itself is going to be a major of great assistance in protecting personal information so that it's not willy-nilly given out to anybody, and there's some accountability in the process. Apart from that, we have also recommended a privacy policy for the RDS that would stretch across ICAM in its interaction on who is and data gathered for registration purposes. We have also recommended that we create a rules engine that would automatically apply data protection in jurisdictions where the individual is entitled to it. That happens in some cases, but it's a bit hit or miss right now, and this would do it in a holistic and hopefully easier for registrars manner. And we have endorsed the concept of privacy proxy services as a way of allowing an individual to ensure that their data, their own personal data, is not in the RDS. And we have proposed a secure protected credentials service for individuals at risk, persons who whose lives or safety would be imperiled if their name and address were associated with the domain name on which they're active. And that covers a wide gamut of persons who are entitled to free speech. So it also removes the registrars from the loop where individuals or groups who might be pursuing people show up at the registrar demanding the name and address of individuals or groups. So that would be the most secure way of protecting your information, and it would introduce a new concept at ICANN, namely anonymous domain registration. So I think that sums it up. On to the next slide, please.
So this is Carlton. The central to our deliberations was the interest of registrants and a very important stakeholder group in our consideration. And so the question is addressed, how does the RDS make life simpler for individual registrants? Well, there's a lot of ways, and I kind of enumerate a few of them. Registrants will have more visibility into what their data is used for. Remember, it's purpose-driven access to the data, and so you will know who's accessing the data at some point and what is the data being used for, because those who are those elements that are gated, we would know who are qualified to access that data and what use they will make of the data. So you have a lot more visibility into how that is used. You can self-update in the new RDS. So you have one portal, one point where you can go and update all of your data. That makes it easier. You have greater flexibility and control over what data is public. And you, because it's purpose-driven data access, you have options to deter fraudulent use of your data. And you really give a place for all of the RDS users to see and learn about who you are as a registrant. So all in all, you get greater assurance about some of the niggling problems that have existed with the current rules, privacy, data protection, security, and auditing policies will be uniformly applied, and you have some assurance of privacy and protection and security. Access to the data is limited to those with a need to know, and those who access your data will be held accountable for the use of that data. So we did think seriously about the benefits to individual registrants. The next slide, Michele will come back again. So Michele.
Thank you, Carlton. Michele again. I'm going to look at this in terms of costs, because obviously this is a key consideration. And the question we were have been asked is, how would the RDS impact registrar and registry costs? So we looked into this in quite a bit of depth throughout our deliberations. And from our perspective, the RDS should not be a profit center. It should not be a way for anybody, ICANN or a third party, to generate revenue. It needs to be run on a purely cost recovery basis. So, what you know, it'll cost a certain amount to run it. It'll cost a certain amount to secure it. All of those other things are not going to be non-zero amounts. But it shouldn't be a case of it turning something that is at the moment perceived as being free into a way of generating revenue. Now, at present, there are costs in the system, in the current way that domain registration data is collected and handled, both by registrars, registries, and by others. However, there is might be a perception out there that it's free, but it's not. So with our proposal, you move a lot of the responsibility that currently lies with both registrars and registries around the handling of the data, you move that away from them. So specifically looking at GTLD registrars, registrars would no longer be obligated to collect or to validate the WHOIS contact data. The registrar would be collecting pre-validated contact IDs from registrants. So, you know, you'd be getting some kind of an ID number or something like that, rather than having to worry about, you know, is the address syntax correct? Is the postcode, does the postcode correspond with the town, et cetera, et cetera, and a whole load of other issues. Contact validation, the compliance aspects around that, and all the data protection burdens, these would all move to the validators, because the registrars wouldn't have to deal with that at all. So that would mean that the registrars would be able to get back to focusing more on the technical aspects of the domain registration. In other words, you know, providing the DNS services, providing the other services within the DNS. Both registrars and registries would no longer have to provide WHOIS services, and because the data storage, processing, and everything else would all move to the validators. The port 43 WHOIS and other ports, because obviously there's web-based, et cetera, these would all shift over to the synchronized RDS system, and both registrars and registries would be able to provide updates to the system over EPP, which, as we know, is the standard way that registrars and registries communicate. And after the last slide on this bit, I'll hand over to Scott. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Michaeli. Scott Hollenbeck here again. The last question, how would the RDS address who was and reverse who is needs? So first, if you're not familiar with what reverse who is or who was is, let me explain that first. With a traditional WHOIS query, you ask for information about a domain name and you get a list of contacts. Reverse WHOIS flips that around a little, in that if you're given a contact, you can ask about the domain names that contact is associated with. WHOIS is a service that allows you to view and review snapshots of historical information. So, for example, changes in name servers, changes in contacts, and things like that. And over the course of time, a number of providers have developed services around providing this type of information. So how would that work with the recommended model that the EWG has come up with? That focuses on two things, data maintenance and data access. And we are definitely recommending that the type of data needed to provide that service would be included in the RDS going forward. And in the context of data access, let's remember what we said about private data and gated access. There are bits of this information that would be considered gated, and we are recommending that access to that data be provided only to people who have gone through the accreditation process and have credentials and permissible purposes that would give them access to that data. Okay? And next slide. Back to you, Michaeli.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, so after going through all the FAQs and everything else, if you want to find out more about the RDS, our report, and everything else, there's a bunch of links you can look at where you can download the report, and we would, of course, if you're being eco-friendly, suggest that you don't print it because it is incredibly long. You can read the FAQs, which are published online. And we've also prepared several videos with members of the EWG talking at cameras and trying to explain some of what we've done. Okay. Now, next slide, please. I'm going to hand this over now to Margie very briefly, who will talk a little bit about some of the next steps. Margie.
Thank you, Michaeli. So essentially, as you heard, the final report has been published. As this effort was requested by the board is now considering how to use the expert working group's final report as a foundation for the GNSO's policy development process. to develop the types of policies that you would need to put together this new system. As you can imagine, with a 160-page document and all the issues that are associated with it, it will be a very complex PDP. And so what will be the board is trying to consider is how to collaborate with the GNSO to find a way, find a path forward to be able to manage the PDP so that it can be successful in looking at these recommendations. So at ICANN 51 in Los Angeles next month, there will be a session on Monday, I believe, called All Things Who Is. And among the topics that will be considered in that session will be how to explore to run a PDP on the EWG recommendations for success. And so what we are interested in hearing from the community, especially at that session, is ideas on how to best structure that policy development process, the PDP, so that it can be successful, so that all the issues that have been raised can be properly explored and that consensus policies can be developed from that. And so that session will be open to the public on Monday, and we'll be looking for feedback on the structure as well as the RDS as it relates to the policy development process. And with that, I guess we'll open it up now to questions. Back to you, Michele.
Thanks, Margie. Okay, so if the operator could please unmute the lines for the people who are dialed
listen
in.
Listen-only mode is now off.
Which I assume has now happened. Woohoo. So if anybody has questions, as previously stated, there are two ways you can do ask questions, either via the chat function in the Adobe room, or you can, you know, do the traditional thing of raising one's hand via the Adobe room. If for some reason you are not on the Adobe connection or only dialed in over the phone, please just identify yourself and I'll put you in the queue. Okay, so the first question we have is from Jolly McPhee. Who will the validators be? So I will put this one to, I will put this out to Susan.
Thank you, Michele. The validators could be a variety of roles. They could be completely independent of service operators that were completely independent from the registrar, or that registrar could act as a validator, but it is a new role in the DNS system, and we would imagine that the validator service provider would also have contracts with ICANN similar to what the registrars do today.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, the outgoing chair of ALAC. Good afternoon, Monsieur Olivier. You have the floor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Michele Nalen. Thank you. Just a couple of questions following up on this validation side of things. As far as the costs of the validation service are concerned, would these be taken up then by ICANN?
I'll speak to that briefly. Thanks, Olivier. This is, of course, is a question that we've been asked, you know, by a lot of people. As you may recall, as you probably know, at present there are several domain extensions which, under their contracts, for a variety of different reasons, have extra levels of validation. So, for example, .travel, .xxx, recently launched actually this week, .organic, and there are others that all have an extra level of validation before the domain can go live. And the costs of that validation are included in the registration cost. So if, for example, if you look at what the average, the retail price of a domain name, then it's going to be in there somewhere. Does that kind of answer your question, Olivier?
Yes, Nicolai, thank you. And can I follow up then on this on the question of validation.
Go on. As outgoing chair of ALAC, we'll give you a certain degree of latitude.
Michele, I need to note that I'm only speaking here as an individual, not as outgoing chair of ALAC or even ALAC chair or any of these. Just a question on once the registration is complete, have you made provisions for the credentials to be verified regularly and so on? Because I can certainly see a number of ways you could get validated, and then you just change your data afterwards, and that's it. You're validated anyway.
Okay, good question. Scott, do you want to speak to this one?
I think the only thing I'd like to add is that and we had put out an RFI for some information, you know, to get an idea of what this could look like, and our findings were, you know, described in the final report. I mean, my own personal thoughts is that when you look at some of the people we talk to, law enforcement agencies, you know, other types of associations, these are the entities that know something about their membership and the purposes for which they will need access. And it seems just natural to me that they may evolve or eventually, you know, develop a validation role in this ecosystem.
Okay. Carlton, and do you want to speak to the question that Olivier raised?
This is Carlton, yes. I want to make a distinction between validation of data with accreditation. The validation of data, we look at RFIs that look at how, for example, the CCTFDs now validate their WHOIS data, and commercial validators and what they look at. We're talking about just verifying that the data we get. The accreditation now is a more extensive process where you are looking at the users of the WHOIS or RDS data, potential users of the RDS data, and ensuring that they are accredited for the purposes that they say they need access to the data. So there is a distinction to be made between validating the WHOIS data and accrediting the potential users of that data for the purposes that they are promoting they need access for.
Okay, thank you. I think the other thing, just speaking a bit more directly to Olivier's question, I mean, Olivier, you're talking about, you know, keep making sure that the data is current. And that
current
if,
and
if
correct.
Somebody, excuse me?
Okay. Current and correct. So ongoing accuracy of the database, basically.
Yeah, okay. The basic premise that we have discussed here is that if the validation and the management of the contact data is being handled by the RDS, then if you change it, then it would have to be revalidated by that system, essentially. So that's all handled over there. I mean, it's quite a big paradigm shift from the current situation where the data is collected, stored and managed by multiple entities within the ecosystem. So that wouldn't really be an issue. And somebody has got noise on their line, could they please mute it? I have two questions on the chat. First one is from Luke. Where and how would the RDS be hosted? And no, you didn't miss that because we didn't actually state it. I'll go to Carlton. I think Scott has dropped off.
Okay, thank you, Michele. The thinking is that the hosting for the RDS would be in a jurisdiction that had high privacy and data protection framework. That is just at the baseline that we thought would be necessary. It's also important to understand that we have not actually determined a place for that. We've simply, in the report, laid out some prerequisites for the hosting that we think would be necessary to make this work well. And the data protection and the privacy regime were two most important attributes for the host, please.
Okay, thank you, Carlton. Scott?
Yeah, the only thing I'd like to add is, as Carlton said, we aren't actually, you know, recommending anything specific at this point. I think the ultimate location and deployment of the service will be something that's subject to policy development and contracts and RFIs and whatnot to be developed and shared and talked about in the future.
Okay, thank you. A follow-up question we have here from Jolly again. Could there be a mechanism that allows registrants to be contacted reliably without necessarily revealing their data? I think I'll put that one to Stephanie.
Stephanie here. Let me be certain that I understand the question. So would there be a way of contacting people without their identity being disclosed? Even when there is a privacy proxy registration, we have discussed the parameters that are now being worked on in the privacy proxy accreditation working group, but we've discussed the recommendations for sending on serious matters to the registrant. So, in other words, you could contact them and... even though you don't know who it is, through the privacy proxy service provider. Am I capturing your question here? Because I'm not sure I have.
Can I add something to it?
Yes. Sure, go ahead.
Yes, I think Stephanie caught that. There's a question of the privacy proxy, and we're working through that. But there's one other way. If you notice, we've added something, a data field caller contact ID, which is a unique number. We are presuming that would be recorded in the RDS record, and you could presumably use that ID for contact without actually knowing the name of the person that you wish to contact. So that's one low-level element that you could use to contact, and that is above and beyond the privacy proxy registration and the relief roles that are associated with that fitness document.
Thank you, Carlton. Olivier, I see your hand, so I assume you have another question.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michele. It's Olivier speaking. I have a question with regards to the data itself being there. As I understand it, the minimum data that will be available now to end users, I'm talking about standard users, not law enforcement agency or anybody with any privilege whatsoever, but that minimum data which will be available will be less than the data that is available to any user on the current WHOIS system. Is that correct?
Thanks, Olivier. I will address that in part. The answer, I would say, is yes and no, and I'll qualify that. What we're talking, the concept I think a lot of people are having issues with is this concept of gating. Gating data does not mean that you are going to make people, I don't know, sign away their lives or get into complicated contracts or anything like that in order to access more data than a minimal set. And the thing is that also as well, some things and some technologies that are implemented at present, we're simply making it clearer that these things exist, and we're actually highlighting them. So for example, Olivier, if you were to do a lookup on a .eu domain name, just as an example, if you were to do a command line lookup on that at present, you would get back a very, very small set of data. But it would provide you with the information that the domain name has been registered. It would tell you which registrar the domain name is with, and it would give you the name servers, which at a technical level is more than enough. However, if you go to the web-based WHOIS run by the .eu registry, you can get back quite a bit more information as long as you give up in quotes, a certain amount of your own information. In other words, you go through a CAPTCHA form, so they're obviously going to be able to log your IP address and various other bits of information. So that is, in many respects, is what we're talking about when we're talking about gating. It could be a simple matter that certain aspects of the data wouldn't be open to the world the way they are now, that somebody might need to go through, to quote-unquote, jump through a couple of hoops to access things. Scott, are you still on the line? If you are, could you speak to this maybe?
No, I don't know that I can add anything else, Michele. As you said, there's going to be a certain amount of technical data primarily that I think will be, we're recommending is made generally available. And, the other bits will be subjected to, the policies we develop around, what is permissible, what is not, and how that all fits the different requirements that the community presents.
Okay, thank you. Is that okay? Does that address your question, Olivier?
Yeah, thanks very much, Michele. And I do have another question afterwards, but I'll let others ask questions, and then if you can come back.
I'll come back to you, so just leave your hand there so I see it. Julie Ruff has a question on the chat. Who is going to validate the accreditors, and who is going to accredit the validators? Okay, that's a horrible question. Sorry, it's not a horrible question. It's a perfectly good question. It's just it's got lots of kind of V's and things in there. Let me see who would like to deal with that one. Lanray.
Yes, thank you, Michele. I think it is the responsibility of ICANN to accredit the validators and the accreditors. So I think they are just new actors that have to be accredited by ICANN. So ICANN has the responsibility to determine who is qualified to be the validator and who is qualified to be the accreditor.
Okay, thank you, Lanry. I mean, the other thing as well, just adding to this, and we've said this on a couple of points, a lot of the finer details about how our proposals would work at an operational level and how they would be implemented are going to be subject to, policy development processes. So at a high level, we can say, well, obviously, ICANN or a party selected by ICANN will have to do this, but, the actual criteria around that would have to be decided. Okay, next in the queue, I have Olivier again.
Yeah, thanks very much, Michele. It's Olivier speaking. Last question for me for today, I think, before I go back to sleep. With regards to IDN extensions, has your group looked at any consequences of IDNs on RDS as far as the data is concerned and so on? Because who is, obviously, we've had plenty of work on that, but will that work carry over to the RDS?
Okay, thanks, Olivia. That's a good question. So, and I'll answer it because it's not actually a terribly complicated one, really. Scott would have been the best person to answer it, but unfortunately he had to leave. There's been a lot of work around alternatives to the step to Whois, and in the numbers space with both Aaron Ripe and others, they've put in the RDAP and other things like that, which is full UTF-8, has full UTF-8 support, and there's no issues there with IDNs. And one of the things that we also said in our report, and from our perspective, this was kind of a no-brainer. It has to work with IDNs. I mean, that was just it. It just has to work, and there's no technical reason why it wouldn't. I don't know if there's anything else anybody wants to add to this. Anybody have a burning desire to add anything to this?
Not really. Let me just add one little thing to it, Michele. This is Carlton. There was extensive conversation about where we would, what the translation requirement would be, at what point do you translate. Do you translate on delivery or do you translate on storage? And that was a kind of detail that we thought would be left to implementation. But the idea is that whoever requested the data, there would be some way of producing the data in a way that could be translated so that they understand what they got back.
Okay, thank you, Carlton. Any further questions? We still have another 30 minutes, so I can see Olivier is typing furiously. Ah, here we go. Translation, transliteration, and also what language does the front end of the RDS have? What portion of the RDS system is multilingual? Carlton, over to you.
Okay. So we thought about this a lot. One of the things that we thought is it was easy enough to have a website where you had multiple languages, especially the UN languages. But the thinking was that because the website, front-facing, customer-facing website, you could have a scheme that would literally deliver the data in any languages you want. And we're figuring out by the time you get to implementing this, you would have online translators at such efficiency that this would not be a problem. So the ultimate objective is to have a translation when you need it, where you need it.
Thank you, Carlton. Okay, any other questions? No?
Lisa, just put a note in the chat that I want to report that the validators can offer local language interfaces. That's one way to deliver language support. You don't have to make it fall from the centralized or the synchronized RDS perspective, but you could have local support from the validators.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I have Olivier again in the queue. Go ahead, Olivier.
Thanks very much, Michele. It's Olivier speaking. I heard we had another 30 minutes, so I thought of more questions. Under what legislation will the overall RDS system run?
Nice question. Thank you, Olivier. Stephanie.
Would you mind repeating the question, Olivier, please?
He asked, under which jurisdiction will the RDS itself run? The system as opposed to its parts, if you understand me. So it itself, under what jurisdiction will it operate?
Okay. I don't want to make this more complex than it needs to be. As Carlton indicated earlier, we were trying to house it in a jurisdiction with high data protection. However, you may be aware that there's litigation going on right now among some major corporations about, in fact, whether data is accessible across boundaries with or without court orders. So the fact that it is ostensibly maintained in one jurisdiction does not necessarily mean that those rules are going to be applicable to manage access to the data. So I think that's a general caveat on jurisdiction. It's incredibly complex. We are aware of the jurisdictional study that is going on under Bertrand de la Chapelle, and we await with interest what he comes up with on that study. So I'm not sure whether that effectively dodges the question or answers it, but I don't...
It answers the question.
It does?
I think so.
Okay, thank you. So now another question on the chat from Olivier. He's asking, who will own the data? So I will throw this one over to Lanre.
Yeah, these are issues that I believe Tony has better expertise on. But I think, in my own opinion, I think the registrant owns its own data. I'm not an expert in this area. But from what I've been hearing, I believe the registrant owns the data and not the RDS. That's just something to give our own opinion on this.
Okay, thanks, Lanre. Susan, any thoughts on this?
sorry, I was on mute. I would agree with Lanre that the registrant would own his data, but I think that's also something for the policy development. There's so many details to this whole system that the community needs to weigh in on.
Thanks, Susan. Just throwing in my own two and a half cents, this is one where I think there's been a certain degree of contention in certain circles because some domain registries would try to argue that the domain registration data would be covered by database copyright law and things like that. So they consider the database to be their copyright. But that's obviously a bit going to be in conflict with the right of the user to control their own data, which I probably suspect Stephanie might want to speak to. Stephanie.
Yes, thank you. I've been well behaved, but this is a key issue, and you know, we should perhaps have given a little glossary in the back of the EWG report on highly contentious issues. This is one because, you know, as a group, I don't think we ever really reached agreement that ICANN was acting as a data controller. There are several data controllers in this model. The assignment of you know, portions of the root, the assignment of all the technical parameters with a domain name, it's arguable that that is not the personal or not the information of the registrant. I mean, they have an interest in it, but so does everybody else. So I think this is a huge policy issue that someone has got to take. And in the next few weeks, I hope we're going to see some clarification of which policy issues are going to be divided up. We had good questions yesterday from Chuck Gomes on this whole issue of how on earth does the GNSO move forward with this.
Thanks, Stephanie. I'm just reading something there from the chat. There's something from Jolly McPhee saying there was the bit about no bulk usage of the spec. And just, you know, speaking to that, one of the things that you know, that has to be aligned is the idea that, you know, that the data can't be abused, so that, you know, if you provide the data for one purpose that is not being used for another. I mean, this is part of where the entire concept of this permissible purpose idea came from. So, you know, there are lines. I mean, that one should probably not cross. And I mean, as Stephanie said, this entire thing around who owns, quote unquote, the data is a contentious issue. It's not clear, and there are very aspects to that. You know, some people will state very, very clearly that it can be owned. Others will state that it can't be owned. And I'm not sure if any of us are really qualified to make a judgment call on that. Okay. Any other questions? Speak now or forever ever hold thy peace, which actually isn't true because you do get to share stuff with us and others in the Los Angeles meeting during the Monday session, which is being held probably in the afternoon, details to be confirmed, etc., etc. Not seeing any other questions. Okay, going once, going twice. Okay, thank you, everybody. The slides and other stuff will be made available online. If anybody has any questions or queries, I'm sure you know how to contact most of us. And for those of you who are coming to LA in person or remotely, don't forget there will be that session on Monday. Thank you all. you can operator can stop the recording.